to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to our show today. It is Wednesday, hump day, middle of the week. My goodness, what a horrific news day it is. Just all kinds of things going on. And we're going to get right to it. And if you'd like to join us on the air, the phone number, as always, is 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. Starting with the economy, all kinds of news there. The Dow had kind of a sort of good day for most of the day, despite all the bad news. Then at the end, it just took this straight down plunge, and it ended down 83 points, literally saved by the bell. I don't know what that portends for the opening tomorrow. But among the news that is having a negative impact on the stock market today, General Motors is headed for a default. Basically, everybody knew this was going to happen. The company's CFO says the firm will not be able to make its June 1st $1 billion debt payment. And I don't want to go polishing my own apple here, but months back when they started talking about these automotive bailouts, and they were saying, oh, it's really just loans. You taxpayers don't have to worry about it. Really, this is loans, and we'll get it all back down the road. And I pointed out that the amount of time that was being given to the automotive companies to turn their businesses around and make them profitable was way too short, especially in an economy where we, the American people, are not in a position to start buying new cars. And I forecast that we were going to reach this point where the auto companies were going to be in serious trouble, and these loans would wind up being on the public tab, which seems to be the situation. So now GM is in default. As you heard on the news break, they're talking about going into bankruptcy. Chrysler appears headed for liquidation right now. And all those billions and billions of taxpayer dollars that were poured good money after bad, that is gone. It is on your tax debt for the coming years, and you're going to have to pay that, for which you will get nothing back. This is called financial management, economic policy coming out of the United States government. And it is a mess. And it's going to wind up on your bill. And smarter people even than I were saying exactly the same thing. It wasn't going to work. And so now they're talking about going into bankruptcy, and they're talking about getting GM to float along a little bit longer by having the bankruptcy court force the United Auto Workers to make a lot of concessions on their pay and their benefits. But ultimately, that is not going to fix the problem, because the problem is that American automotive technology has been lax. These auto companies have been riding their reputation and their fleet deals and basically just coasting along while foreign automakers have been moving ahead with superior technology. And these foreign companies, they make good cars. And those people in the United States who are able to buy a car are looking more at those foreign cars than they are at the American cars. So these automakers are not going to be able to turn around. And the last thing we want to do, we dare not allow any more of our money, of the public money, to get poured onto these corporations when there is really no chance of turning them around. And even if by some miracle they're turned around and they're going to have to repay that money somewhere down the road, where are they going to get that money from? They're going to get it from the customers. They're going to have to raise prices on the cars in order to make back that money, which means ultimately we, the American people, are going to pay for it one way or the other in higher auto prices, which will mean the cars are either going to have to be engineered much more cheaply, or they're going to have to sell for higher prices, both of which are going to hurt their long-term sales. So this is not looking good at all. Now, the other bad news, everybody's talking about this today. The chief financial officer of Freddie Mac, David Kellerman, was found dead in his home this morning. Most reports are saying he was found hanging. Dow Jones Industrial reports, for some reason, said he had a bullet wound in him. And so we're not too sure about that. We're getting from all the neighbors, usual thing. He was a terrific guy, no reason to kill himself. He was happy, he was up, so forth and so on. I'm expecting by tomorrow the media will be filled with all these first-person reports about how terribly depressed he was and how he felt responsible and how he blamed himself for all that was going on, so forth and so on. Frankly, I am very suspicious I have seen far too many suicides that were actually homicides. We've seen a lot of them, I mean, throughout the year, starting with Vincent Foster, which was the case that got me started on this path of political blogging and talk radio. And so I don't have any information about Kellerman one way or the other, except that it doesn't make sense that he would kill himself because he had only been temporarily in the position that he was in and hardly, you know, hadn't been there long enough to feel that he was responsible for what was going on. And I will point out that under United States law, in an investigation, homicide is the presumption until a different cause of death is proven. Suicide has to be proven. You can't just say, oh, it looks like a suicide, that's it. We've seen that happen. But that's not the way it's supposed to work. You presume it is a homicide. You have to prove that it's suicide. And with them going out and saying, almost right at the start, presume suicide, so forth and so on, kind of hard to say. Kind of hard to say. The question that is coming up, I think, in a lot of people's minds is, what did this individual know? He was certainly in a position of privilege where he had inside information. What did he know? What was he about to release? Who was threatened by his continued position at Freddie Mac? So we're going to be watching that one very, very closely. But from the commentary we're hearing from his friends and associates today, it doesn't sound like he was the sort to be considering suicide. No doubt the media will find some people to support that in the coming days, but I am very suspicious, and I'm not ready to say that this one is a suicide. The best that we can say is, we don't know. We really don't know. Now, going to move on here to what I'm starting to call AIPAC Gate. Jane Harman, Democrat from California, representative. And yes, she's Jewish. It's a big deal all over the blogs that none of the corporate media will mention that she is, in fact, Jewish and a big pro-Israel supporter and regularly speaks at AIPAC, so forth and so on. Her story is already starting to change. Yesterday she was saying she didn't remember that there was a phone call and didn't know what they were talking about. And today she's now admitting, yes, there was a phone call, and she acknowledges it really did happen. Kind of hard to deny it. They got tape on her. And basically, in a nutshell, for those of you who have not been following along with this story that closely, basically, Jane Harman, the national security Democrat, sold out the security of the United States of America on behalf of a foreign power, Israel. Jane Harman was taped on a phone call with a suspected Israeli agent, agreeing to intervene with the Justice Department and the White House to get the espionage charges against two AIPAC employees reduced. In return, the Israeli agent promised that AIPAC would put pressure on House Speaker Nancy Pelosi to get Jane Harman appointed head of the House Intelligence Committee. So there's a little quid pro quo there, little quid pro quo going on there. Apparently AIPAC went to Nancy Pelosi and basically said that all AIPAC funding for her future campaigns would vanish immediately if Jane Harman was not made head of the Intelligence Committee. Now, here is the latest news here, following hard on the heels of this. And yes, it is a fact that originally Rosen and Wasserman were charged with espionage, and the charges were reduced to merely being in possession of classified documents. So what AIPAC was asking Harman for did actually happen. It was accomplished. The charges were reduced. Now we're hearing through sources that the charges may be dropped entirely, and these guys are going to get a get-out-of-jail-free card. They're going to take a walk on betraying the United States government, the people of the United States, to Israel. These guys are going to take a walk. And you have to wonder, you know, what is going on here? We already know there's blackmail in this story, because Alberto Gonzalez prevented investigation of Jane Harman in order to convince her to reverse her position and support the warrantless wiretapping. When we come back from this break, I'm going to posit a theory as to what is going on in the back rooms of Washington, D.C. right now. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. We'll be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're talking about AIPAC Gate, the Jane Harmon espionage case. I mean, this would make a really good movie. I mean, with all the stuff that's going on here. I just basically wanted to finish up that it's becoming painfully obvious that there are two standards of justice here in the United States, because these two officials for AIPAC, Rosen and Weissman, basically, it looks like they're going to get a free walk on this one, and yet their co-conspirator in the Pentagon Office of Special Plans, Larry Franklin, the guy who gave them the classified documents, he got 12 years. And so it seems like in the United States, if you're part of AIPAC and Israel and that, you can go wherever you want. I mean, the three Mossad agents they arrested in New York, cheering and clapping as the World Trade Towers came down, they were held for maybe a month, and then they were sent back home to Israel. They're big TV celebrities over there. They've got videos up on YouTube about, yes, we did all these wonderful things. And Larry Franklin gets 12 years, and Rosen and Weissman are going to get a walk. And apparently Jane Harmon is part of the mechanism that's gotten them off the hook, got the charges reduced, and now they're saying, okay, time to call it quits. We're going to let these guys go. Talk about a double standard. If Larry Franklin deserves 12 years for betraying the United States of America to Israel, then Rosen and Weissman deserve 12 years for betraying the United States government to Israel. It shouldn't be a double standard like this, and yet it obviously is. We're going to go to the phones now. We've got Dave in Texas. Aloha, Dave. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Good afternoon. I was going to bring up something else you may want to look into. That a report just today of the, I believe it's the Freddie Mac CEO, said to have committed suicide.
Mm-hmm.
I'm skeptical about that. Was he committed suicide or was suicided? I don't know. I was going to recommend you might want to investigate into that and find out what really happened, as the saying goes, because he was part of an institution which lost over $50 billion, as much or more money as the Madoff, and it may or may not have even been tied in with the Madoff losses or just outright thefts of money. And the taxpayers are on the hook for having to pay higher taxes over time. $45 billion TARP fund's gone to Freddie Mac to bail them out, but there's still $5 billion in the hole, and the institution right now, as it currently exists, even after bailouts, is actually not solvent. It's $5 billion in the red as of now after sending $45 billion to them. So I think there's a big story there, and I don't know that how credible is this guy. They say they don't have any, as of yet, signs of foul play in his death or not. That means they haven't finished their investigation, either that or some professional hits team decided to leave no evidence behind it. We don't know whether they really committed suicide or not. There's got to be something to his death, whatever, whether he did it himself or not, because look, the colossal, plus it's tied in with a man by the name of Franklin Rains, who's in the Obama administration now and was in Obama's campaign at the time these losses occurred, when the Congress, the banking committee chair, Christopher Dodd in the Senate and Barney Frank in the House, they put it over on Freddie Mac to offer loans to, which became subprime, to people who clearly weren't going to be able to pay them back. And they're making the American people want to bail out this institution and pay money for paying off these bad loans for the people who took them out who can't pay them, rather than what they should do is sell these properties off at real estate auctions and let the market determine this without any taxpayer money is required, is what should happen to these failed mortgages, in my opinion. So they're ripping us off, but there's got to be something extra that you might want to look into on that case as well, I would say.
Well, we are paying attention to it, and I did mention earlier in the show that I am not convinced that this guy committed suicide. It doesn't fit the pattern. Now,
he was
only in his current position, I think, for the last few months. And I think if I'm going to go from the point of view of presuming this is a homicide, which is the way these investigations are normally supposed to work, I would say that probably he may have learned something or discovered something over the last couple of months that made him a threat to somebody else. We certainly know vast sums of money have been vanishing into these black financial holes. And we know, as you were saying, Freddie Mac is still $5 billion in the red, and nobody knows where a lot of this money went. I mean, even the top cop for TARP, when she was interviewed on The Daily Show, was saying, we don't really know where all of this money is going. It's all over the newspapers. This whole setup is ripe for fraud and manipulation and just simply gouging the taxpayers, and that's what's going on. And this Kellerman may have discovered something, and that made him a threat to some other people. And yes, there are professional hit squads running around this country. There was that one that was reporting to Dick Cheney. There's no reason to expect that they've gone out of business just because Dick Cheney's out of the White House. They may still be there and taking orders from who knows who. The Bush family could even be from Barack Obama. We don't know. And the best that we can say is we don't know. But I don't buy the story of a suicide. His friends and neighbors were all saying he was a wonderful guy. He certainly was financially successful. He was not himself personally ruined by any of this thing. And he hadn't had the job that he was in long enough to feel responsible for it or even to be legally culpable unless something illegal was going on. Then the corporate, then he'd be personally liable. But as far as what's been going on with Freddie Mac all this time, over the last several years, you know, that's not his responsibility. So, you know, I think the most likely situation, if this is indeed a murder, the most likely situation is that he learned something in his new job that made him a threat to somebody else.
I agree with that. And my concern is that the monies that have disappeared are probably all going to the same place. They're being funneled, I believe, through these big international accounts, through these European banks and the Rothschild clans. They're trying to run the world, and they're trying to suck us dry. They hope to create their one-world government, and they're hoping strangely for us to fund it without even realizing it through their TARP monies that keep disappearing into this black hole. They are the black hole. They're ripping us off. And we need to take our national sovereignty back. We need to get our Constitution back in this country, which we're really pulled away from, get rid of this Federal Reserve and fiat money altogether entirely, and have our own real country and our own real asset-backed money supply taken back. All of the financial systems, whenever they set up a fiat-only money system, sooner or later, the banking system, they said they've noticed this in other countries, the IMF's noticed this. All these countries that use a fiat-only system are doomed to fail sooner or later if they don't have asset-backed
money. Yeah, because it's a giant pyramid scheme. When you have the reserve debt-based monetary system, the only money that exists is money that's been borrowed from the central bank. And once it's borrowed, more money is owed to the banking system than is actually in existence. That's why if the economy isn't growing and conquering other countries, it's eventually going to reach a point of crash and massive deflation. It has to. It is inherent in the design philosophy of the system. Now, as far as where all the money is going, I don't know that it's necessarily going to any one location. I think what we're seeing is a recognition by a lot of people in positions of authority that the U.S. economy and the U.S. government aren't going to hold together much longer. And they're just grabbing all that they can and converting it to other currencies, and they're stashing it in the Caymans and Australia and wherever else that they can hide the money. And, you know, basically just stash it away so that when everything falls apart here in the U.S., they can run off and they've got their secret retirements.
Well, what do you predict if you say it's not going to last? I mean, their current form of government, whether hijacking our country, I don't think will last. But I don't predict the physical constitutional breakup of the country, just that we get the constitutional form of government that we're supposed to have back. Away from mm-hmm. people who've hijacked it since at least 1913, if not earlier. That's what I propose. Like, some people even propose having all the states break up and go the separate ways. I actually think that would end up being a recipe for disaster, and I'm not currently persuaded to promote that.
I want
a true constitutional system back.
Okay, we got to let you go. Got to let you go here. We've got a commercial break. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here. You're listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. And just finishing up with what Dave was saying about the money and the monetary system, I don't think that the people who are planning a global bank are necessarily trying to get us to pay for it, because the whole point of a debt-based fiat monetary system is they just print up the money they need. They just print it up as they go along. And the problem with this whole system, as we've seen here in the United States, because all the money that is in existence is the result of a loan at interest. More money is owed to the banks than is actually in existence. Sooner or later, it's got to come. It's a pyramid. There always has to be a new and larger body of borrowers. And if you can't get more borrowers, you have to get the existing borrowers to borrow more. And so you do things like you run up housing prices and you make things more expensive. So the indebtedness keeps growing and the cash generation at the banks keeps growing. But when you reach the point where there are no new borrowers coming in and the existing borrowers can't borrow anymore, that's when it comes apart. And if you're a nation, you can maybe solve that lack of capitalization by invading another country and saying, oh, well, just go take their money and use it to pay off the interest on our loans. Or if you're really a mature society, you manufacture things that you sell to other countries and you take that money to pay off your loans to the central bank. But it's a pyramid scheme, plain and simple. And so this idea that the same banking system can be applied to the entire planet, I'm sorry, it can't work. It'll be great for the first couple of generations. There'll be money pouring from the sky for all kinds of wonderful things. And then the entire planet will be locked into a permanent, unpayable debt, and they will be slaves. Economic slaves. Don't have to wear chains, just that little piece of plastic. That is your slave tag. All right, moving right along, we're going to get into Torturegate, a lot of gates that we're dealing with today. And we are seeing, because of public pressure, because of phone calls and letters from people just like you, who are outraged that the United States of America engages in torture, we have at least forced Barack Obama to acknowledge the possibility that maybe somewhere down the road they kind of sort of might want to take a look at starting an investigation into maybe some of the abuses. And they're going to focus on the lawyers who wrote the legal memos justifying the torture. In other words, they've backed off of saying we're not going to investigate and punish at all. And now they're hemming and hawing and trying to make it look like, well, okay, we might take a look. But we're already hearing indications that if there is a torture commission, or a prisoner abuses commission, or whatever they're going to call it, it's going to be just like the 9/11 commission. In other words, it is going to be a crock that you will pay for, and they'll shovel that all over us and say, see, are you happy now? We investigated. Go away. Go back to your farms and fields and start slaving to pay off all this debt we're dumping on you. But this should be the scandal of the century, the United States committing torture. And everybody knows it. We're hearing from other European countries besides Spain and Norway now. Other European countries are starting to step in and say that if the United States government does not honor its international obligations to arrest, try, and punish those who authorized the use of torture on prisoners of war and civilians, that they will try the leaders in absentia. And, of course, all it will really mean is that there will be countries where members of the Bush administration are not going to be able to go because they'll be arrested. But they're all basically retiring anyway. They're retiring to South America, just like the old Nazi war criminals. They'll live on their ranch up in the Andes Mountains, and they won't go anywhere, and they'll have lots of money, and they'll laugh at the rest of the world because they got away with doing what they did. Now, we're hearing already indications of a cover-up. We already know that the CIA destroyed all the videotapes that were made of these interrogations, in part because they claimed they wanted to protect the identity of the torturers. And the other part of it is some of these tapes predate the legal authorization of torture from the Department of Justice. So the CIA was doing this stuff all along. And we've seen, you know, CIA torture manuals get leaked going all the way back to South America. I mean, some of the techniques they're using in Iraq and Guantanamo is stuff that was being done down in Chile when Pinochet was in power. So this really is nothing new. What is new in the age of the Internet is that the American people, ordinary working American men, women, children, now know this truth about their government. And that is never, ever, ever going to go away. We're hearing that the Bush administration intentionally collected and destroyed all documentation from any of their officials saying torture was wrong, that it was illegal, that it was going to get them in trouble. They basically just shredded it all. So they had a thin little file saying, see, everybody agrees we should do this. And all the dissenting opinions were absolutely destroyed. We know for a fact that dozens of prisoners held by the Central Intelligence Agency are still unaccounted for. Nobody knows where they went. Nobody knows if they're still alive. Nobody knows what's happened to them. They could be waterboarded even as I speak these words somewhere in the world at one of these rendition sites. We know that the American people are getting upset about this because John Yoo, who is one of the legal architects of the torture policies, he's one of the guys who wrote the little memo saying, we are allowed to torture under thus and thus condition. And he just went to do a public talk at Chapman University in California, and apparently the audience was screaming war criminal at him as he approached the stage. Good. Good. Whenever you see any of these people, just scream war criminal at them. Scream torturer at them. Let them know that this is going to follow them to the grave. Now, in an official apology to Binyam Mohammed, an officer with MI5 British Intelligence admits giving false evidence in this guy's trial at Guantanamo before the military commission. Basically lied. Lied about the guy. Lied to get him convicted, thrown into Guantanamo, and tortured. On the basis of this one apology and admission, we know for a fact that innocent people are being tortured. Innocent people were tortured. We know there's one other case, very well documented, a taxi driver in Iraq. And that's all he was. He drove a taxi cab. And the U.S. was offering these huge rewards for anybody from Al-Qaeda. And so the people, the bounty hunters, went out and said, okay, oh, let's grab this guy. And they took him to America and say, really, this guy is Al-Qaeda. I know he looks like a taxi cab driver, but he's really Al-Qaeda, and he's a big deal, and give us the money. And they threw him in a box and flew him to Guantanamo, and he was tortured until he died. Now, all over the corporate media, we are seeing all of these apologists for the administration trying to concoct all of these 24 scenarios and all of these situations where torture might be justified. But the bottom line is this. The scenario they're describing does not and never did exist. There was no nuclear bomb in the middle of a city due to go off in 1 hour, and we have the guy that we absolutely know knows where it was, and we got to torture him to get the information out. That never happened. What we had were innocent people who were framed, set up, sold into slavery for the reward money, and we tortured them to death. We put little kids in locked metal boxes with insects. You can't justify that. It can't be justified under any circumstances at all to do that. Because all you're going to do is make more enemies around the world when this brutality gets out. You set the stage for our young men and women in uniform to be treated the same way when they get captured. Because if we're not going to obey the Geneva Convention for the handling of military prisoners, then neither will any other country with which we are at war. The CIA is trying to come out and say that they succeeded in thwarting a 9/11-style attack out in Los Angeles. They're trying to wave that one around. That story was discredited by intelligence experts years ago. It didn't happen. It was another phony setup with an informant getting people to talk tough, and they arrested him and they let him go. There was nothing there. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means
they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the last segment of our show today. And we've got a caller on the line. We're going to get to him in just a minute. I'm looking at the email right now. The taxi driver was tortured and killed at Abu Ghraib, not Guantanamo. I stand corrected on that. And yes, you're correct. It was at Abu Ghraib. There are so many of these dungeons all over the place. It's just impossible to keep them all sorted out. But there's all kinds of terrible things happening in all of them. And even today, with all that we have learned about Khalid Sheikh Mohammed being waterboarded 180 times in 1 month, his children locked in metal boxes with insects, we still have not heard the worst of it. There was probably a reason they destroyed all those videotapes. The part I really want to know is, what sick person in the White House got off watching those things? It's just absurd. Anyway, going to go to the phones. We've got Mike in Georgia. Aloha, Mike. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Good evening, Mr. Rivero. What's on my mind is I was looking at a posting on your website. The first one, it made a reference to, oh my God, CBS News telling the truth about the bailouts and follow the bailout money. And then underneath it is a second posting tied to it called Undoing the Fascist Coup, July 4th, and suggesting when these politicians come back during that time frame, that the people, when they come out to do whatever, perform a citizen's arrest and basically zip tie and hold him and demand that he be arrested, read off the charges, Mirandizing.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with the article I'm talking about?
Yeah, I'm familiar with the article that you're talking about, and basically that's the one of the members' posts up there, and it's an interesting concept. I don't know how practical it is. Because if you do a citizen's arrest on somebody and take them to the government, and the government just turns around and lets them go again, which they're going to do. I mean, we've seen people already try and arrest George Bush, and they wind up in jail themselves. So the government is definitely not going to go along with a citizen's arrest, no matter what crimes these people have committed. I mean, look what's happening with this AIPAC spy case. These guys betrayed the United States of America to a foreign government. And yet the government is just trying to find any excuse to let them off and let them go, even though their American counterpart got 12 years in prison. So right now the system as a whole is corrupted. And I think anything that purports to try and work within the system, to try and find a law, to try and find a procedure which will allow us to recover our constitutional republic by working within the system, I think we're way past that. Even Claire Wolf wrote that a while ago, saying, we're at that awkward time in history. It's too late to work within the system because the system is too corrupt and it's too soon to shoot the bastards. Of course, she came out more recently and said, I was wrong. It's time to shoot the bastards. And, we joke about it a lot. But what I was hoping was going to happen a week ago today when we had all those wonderful tea parties all over the United States, I was hoping that the U.S. government was going to look out their windows at all those people all across the country, and they were going to get the message that we've really gone about as far as we can go with this thing, that our tolerance and our patience is exhausted, that we are tired, we are angry, and, we're mad as heck, and we're not going to take it anymore.
Well, I really like the suggestion, and I agree that they probably wouldn't continue to hold them, but if they were all detained at the same time in this time frame, I think it would have more of an impact on them than, trying to get them to represent us by phoning them. I've already tried that. They're not going to represent us, but they would understand better their situation if they were actually snatched.
Well, if you've got enough people where you can get past all the security and snatch these people, maybe that's the time to tar and feather them.
I'm wondering if we're close enough where this would be almost like when they charge the stage at a rock concert, that the arresting citizens would be hundreds of them.
I think we're reaching that point. I mean, when any one individual acts, they're going to become a target, they're going to become a focus, and, the cops are going to hit them. But we know the government right now is developing wide-area tasers, tasers that don't just zap one person, but zap hundreds of them. They're getting ready. They know we've reached the point where the American people are going to stand up and say, enough already, you're fired. Look at the Constitution. Up at the top it says, we the people, we own the country, we are in charge, the government is a temporary custodian. Give us back the keys, turn in your lunchbox, you're fired.
Okay, well, I appreciate your input on it, and I'd like to encourage anybody else that's got any ideas of how we might get away with it, maybe to call in and make some suggestions.
Well, I'm in this awkward position. I don't like violence, and I don't like encouraging violence, but we are obviously headed toward a crisis. I'm still holding out hope that the U.S. government is going to collapse the way the USSR did, probably because the economy is going to implode here. And I'm sort of looking at maybe July, August is when that is likely to happen. But we're on our way definitely to some kind of a confrontation between the people of the United States and the U.S. government. And this situation with Israel just arrogantly displaying its power and authority over our government, I think this is angering a lot of people. And, we definitely need to deal with that one. Okay, so, Dave, thanks a lot for the phone call. We're going to let you go here. And I'm going to wrap up the show today here, as I was just mentioning, this issue that Israel is grown arrogant in their ability to tell the United States what to do. And it has, going back to 9/11, if you look at Israel's behavior before and after 9/11, after 9/11, Israel just became arrogant and demanding, like they just knew whatever they wanted, they were going to get. White phosphorus to drop on Palestinian kids? No problem. Here's a whole shipload of it. More money, even though the Americans are starving and losing their homes and their jobs and eating out of trash cans? No problem. Here's more money. We are a nation that cannot say no to Israel. Or in other words, our government cannot say no to Israel. I think Israel is blackmailing our government with 9/11. And I want to know what idiot inside the federal government thought that they could co-partner with Israel on 9/11 and not have Israel turn around and blackmail us with it from now on. That was probably the biggest single blunder in the history of the United States. Anyway, I want to get back to this situation. Israel's Foreign Minister Avigdor Lieberman, in his first comprehensive interview on foreign policy since taking office, basically came out and said, America accepts all our decisions. The Obama administration will put forth new peace initiatives only if Israel wants it to. These are direct quotes. This reminds me of another quote by Ariel Sharon, reported on Kol Yisrael Radio some years back. I want to tell you something very clear. Don't worry about American pressure on Israel. We, the Jewish people, control America, and the Americans know it. And finally, it wasn't all that long ago when Ehud Olmert issued a statement basically saying that when it looked like the Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice was going to go into the United Nations with a resolution that Israel did not like, that Olmert called President George Bush, literally ordered him off the stage where he was making a speech, told him this proposal is unacceptable to Israel, and George Bush called Condoleezza Rice and had her vote against her own proposal that she had written and crafted and put forward, and she voted against it because George Bush told her to. And Olmert is saying that he literally ordered President Bush off the stage in the middle of a speech to express his displeasure. Now, the White House has denied that this actually happened, but it is an indicator of Israel's utter arrogance in the world. And there is no questioning the reality that, in point of fact, Condoleezza Rice did turn around 180 degrees and voted against her own resolution at the United Nations. We keep seeing this over and over and over again. Avigdor Lieberman is just the latest in a long line of Israeli officials who continually rub our noses in the fact that whatever Israel wants, Israel gets, often to the detriment of the United States of America. And now we are hearing that the two AIPAC spies, after getting the charges reduced from espionage down to possession of classified documents, that now the whole situation may simply be dropped. Could you imagine if these were Iranian spies or Iraqi spies or Russian spies? Would they be treated this way with kid gloves? Absolutely not. There is something going on with Israel and the United States government that we, the people, have to find out what it is, because we've lost control of our own country. The U.S. government doesn't control this country anymore. Israel does, and they prove it day after day after day after day. All right, that's the end of our show today. We'll be back tomorrow with our Thursday show, more phone calls, and all kinds of interesting stuff. Man, what a busy news day it was. Thanks for the callers who called in. And until tomorrow, stay safe, be well. Hug your loved ones, drive very carefully. Lot of road rage out there. It's getting worse and worse. People are just, they're taking out their hostilities in traffic. And aloha, America.